Today, we look at how national political developments have affected provincial rule in the Free State. And we speak to Roy Jankielsen, the Democratic Alliance leader in that province. Welcome, Roy.
Good morning, Chris. Thank you.
Roy, what happened last week?
We had an interesting event that took place last week, and that is that for the first time, opposition parties, this is since 1994, have received chairpersonships of committees within the Free State legislature. And that's simply because of pure mathematics. The ANC dropped by almost 10% to 52% in the Free State. We have a very small legislature of 30 members. So after the executive was constituted and put together, the ANC were left with 6 seats in the legislature, as opposed to the total opposition's 40. And we were very happy because we grew with an additional seat to 7, so we comprise half of those 14 seats. So what it came down to is that the ANC were unable to fill all the positions, because after they'd filled the speaker, deputy speaker positions, they still had chair of chairs, chief whip, etc. And there are 8 committees that needed to be filled. So after some time of negotiation since the election, we managed to obtain 2 chairperson positions, the Committee on Petitions and the Committee of Infrastructure in the legislature, and the EFF and Freedom Front each got 1 committee chairpersonship as well, and then the ANC were able to take up the other committee chair positions. This brings in a new type of dynamic within the legislature, where we will be more consensus-based. We did indicate that we will continue to play an active opposition role in the legislature, because the legislature's constitutional mandate is to hold the executive accountable. And that is what we'll do. We'll just be able to do it from different positions within the legislature. We also increased our numbers on committees from 1 person per committee to 2 people per committee, which will also strengthen our position within committees. So within the legislature, I think we'll be working closer together as political parties to implement the legislature's constitutional mandate. It's also interesting because the ANC even had to cut one of their core cabinet positions, one of their MECs, to give them an additional seat in the legislature. But in spite of that, they couldn't get the necessary majority they needed to fill all those seats. And this is something that we predicted during the election campaign.
Roy, does that make you more optimistic for the future of the province? I remember the last time we spoke, you were quite despondent.
Yes, I think it makes me optimistic for 2 reasons. I think the legislature is stronger, and one of the reasons why we've seen the decay in the Free State of service delivery and large-scale corruption is because the legislature wasn't able to carry out its mandate to hold the executive accountable, because all the senior positions in the legislature, all the committee chair positions, were also held by the ANC, who were also in the executive, which is not an ideal situation that the people who are chairing the oversight committees report to the same people within the party over whom they are supposed to do oversight and who they're supposed to hold accountable. So I think things will look better from the legislature side. And we obviously will do everything we can to put alternatives on the table and ensure that these benefit the people of the Free State.
Roy, now you recently received a public protector's report on the funeral costs of an MEC. Can you tell us what that report contained, please?
Yes. Several months ago, before the election, one of our MECs passed away tragically in a motor vehicle accident near Wynberg. And unfortunately, the provincial government decided to use this to spend large amounts of money, and close to 6 million rand was spent on the funeral costs of the MEC and his protector. And we regarded these amounts as excessive, and we reported it to the public protector. And last or 2 weeks ago, the public protector brought out a report and agreed with the DA that the funeral costs were excessive, but went a little bit further in the investigations and also found that there was a conflict of interest within the office of the Premier, where officials were sitting on the bid adjudication committee, but these same officials were also the people who drafted the specifications, which is a clear conflict of interest. And then there were also, interestingly, increased amounts on the tender that weren't in the specifications that were also approved, substantial amounts. And the recommendations of the public protector are, firstly, that the president and the national head of treasury have to set the costs for state funerals. So they must cap those costs, which I think is a good outcome for the country at national and provincial levels, where these costs weren't capped previously and became excessive. And then secondly, the public protector also said that certain individuals from the Director General in the Free State and the officials who were involved must be subject to disciplinary action, and this within specific time frames. And then also that the Hawks have to investigate this, and I have confirmed that the Hawks are looking into these costs as well. It is tragic that a funeral of someone has to be turned into a public protector report. And we did our duty as the official opposition, but I think that the executive must take into account that they're not doing anyone any favors when they do this. And it's not good for them or for the families involved when this type of thing happens.
Roy, the last time we spoke, you told me that state capture was perfected in the Free State, that the rule book was written there and was only applied somewhere else, and that much of that happened under the premiership of Ace Magashule. How is the fight to hold him accountable going?
Chris, that's a loaded question, because in some respects there have been some improvements, but in other respects it's more of the same. At provincial level, we've heard rhetoric from our previous premier and our current premier regarding corruption and how they're going to fight corruption. But the big fight against corruption is not going to be from political platforms and in rhetoric. It's going to be actually doing away with the CADA deployment policy, which caused this. And Ace Magashule took that CADA deployment policy and turned it into state capture in the Free State. And in fact, I always said perfected it there as a perfect instrument to implement these deals with tenderpreneurs in the province. And that was the major cause of state capture in the province. And then this was also exported to the rest of the country. Not that it wasn't taking place in other parts of the country previously, but I think in the Free State, we saw how political power merged with executive authority to implement this and perfect it. So there has been the rhetoric from our ANC leaders, the new ANC factions in the Free State, but those cadres who implemented these policies are still in place. So the ANC still has to take this major decision, and that is to do away with CADA deployment and bring in expertise as the main instrument for implementing or for appointing officials within the administration. And that has yet to be done. And of course, at municipal level, state capture is continuing unabated, because we see the impact of this on service delivery in our municipalities. As we speak, many municipalities and individuals on the ground are still struggling with water. They were struggling before the election, and this hasn't changed for those people. And this is a human rights issue. we drafted a substantial report for the Human Rights Commission before the election, which we submitted to them during their public hearings in the province. We also published this internationally, and we hope that this will have an impact on service delivery on the ground. So we're waiting for the Human Rights Commission to bring their report and their recommendations as well. But, you know, it impacts on the right to water. It impacts on people's educational rights. It has an economic impact, which impacts on people's right to find employment and to look after themselves, to supply livelihoods for themselves and their families. So it is very broad in the Free State, because you can't have any development without water. People can still live without electricity and roads, but water is a basic human right.
Now, Roy, Ace Magashule's former PA has been arrested in the United States and is going to be extradited. What will that mean for his upcoming trial?
Well, we hope that we will have convictions because we've seen in the past that many officials have been arrested and officials are thrown under the bus during these investigations. And if we could get a conviction of someone like Ace Magashule, whose trial starts in August in earnest, hopefully this time, it will send a clear message to the people of the Free State and the country that the state is serious about dealing with corruption. And we hope that the state do have a watertight case in this regard, and that we're not going to see it like with other previous politicians in the Free State thrown out of court or having the case withdrawn. We hope that we will see convictions. But obviously, it's going to depend on how well our state prosecuting authority performs and the state prosecutors, and of course, on the political will to actually drive this through and make sure that we have a good outcome. And a good outcome is convictions. We want to see people in orange overalls in jail, not just in the courts endlessly.
Turning to other crime in your region, Roy, some of BizNews viewers have been touched to complain and share their frustrations with cross-border smuggling of vehicles, with the cattle rustling that's also continuing unabated. What can you tell us?
Chris, this is one of the most serious crimes in the Free State, and that is the cross-border crime that is taking place, and it has a huge economic impact, not just for our border communities, but also the larger communities, because it's not just the crime that's taking place. It's also the cross-border influx of illegal immigrants who are also involved in, for example, the Zama Zamas in Welkom, and the human trafficking that's also taking place there within those mines, the abuse of people in those mines. And there doesn't seem to be a solution from law enforcement agencies for this problem. Just setting up special task teams is not enough. We need to see a reduction in this on the ground. But the cross-border crime is continuing unabated. I visited the border a month or two ago and actually witnessed firsthand the lack of law enforcement on the border. Firstly, the infrastructure. There is no fence on the border. You just walk across. You can see the poles where the fences were, and you just step across from one side of the border to the other. And as you look across the hills and mountains there's no visible policing. There's no South African National Defense Force in sight. There's no police presence there in sight. All what you see are the Lesotho citizens' cattle grazing on the South African side, which happens on a daily basis. They chase their cattle across the border. They graze there. When the local farmers or communities threaten to impound the cattle, they set the grass alight during the fire season and cause fires out of revenge attacks. And of course, there are the physical attacks as well by these cattle rustlers. But while we were there, we were also informed by the community of human trafficking that takes place across the border, of the very serious drug trafficking that's taking place. And then, as you mentioned, also the vehicle theft syndicates who are crossing the border into Lesotho. And this doesn't only affect the Free State. Obviously, these vehicles are coming from all over the country. And the drugs don't only flow into the Free State, but also into other parts of the country as well. And it's some of the stories we heard, they are actually tragic, of local schools on the border on the South African side where children are addicted to these drugs, and these drug traffickers come across the border, and during breaks, these kids have to go and trade themselves for the drugs. We've also, heard stories of complicity with our law enforcement agencies where they are in fact assisting some of these criminals who are perpetrating these crimes. And it doesn't seem that there's a political will at this stage to deal with these issues at a national or provincial level. And what's also taking place is not just those types of crime, but we also see the trafficking in illegal goods such as lion bones, for example, from farms in the Free State, because we have SADC protocols within the Southern African Development Community, and anything that's packaged within one of the SADC countries is not subjected to searches at our ports of exit. So if you package something in Lesotho in terms of those protocols, it goes through the country and it is exported through our ports of exit without being searched, because the SADC agreements are written in such a way that the countries are supposed to have mutual trust. So we find that things are packaged there into containers, hopefully not humans as well, but it's not impossible, and then are exited, and they're not are taken through our country and to our ports of exit, and then find their way to places abroad.
Well, with the appointment of a new Minister of Police, there are people who are hopeful that there could be action, certainly at national level and hopefully also at provincial level. What do you think, Roy?
Well, we are hopeful that the new government of national unity will follow a new approach when it comes to dealing with cross-border crime. And we hope that Ian Cameron will be very successful on the Portfolio Committee of Police in Parliament. And I think you did interview him recently as well. So we are hopeful that things will improve. But what we'll need to do is improve the whole culture of law enforcement in the country. Because I always say that the best deterrent to would-be criminals is the knowledge that if you do commit a crime, you will be detected, you will be convicted, and you will be punished. The type of punishment, death penalty, etc., I think is less of a deterrent than the knowledge that you will, in fact, be caught and you will be nailed and jailed if you commit a crime. And we need to bring that about through perhaps changes in policies. And the most important thing, I think, is the change in culture and in the political will to actually implement our laws. Because it's not the lack of legislation that is causing the crimes, but it's the lack of implementation of this legislation. And we have very good policies as the DA that we think can assist in the fight against crime. The decentralization of law enforcement to provincial and local level, and then also the implementation of special rural units that can deal with cross-border crime and rural crimes using technology, drone technology, cameras, and various other means to fight against crime.
Thank you. That was Democratic Alliance Free State leader Roy Jankelsen speaking to BizNews viewers about crime and politics in his province. Thank you, Roy, and I'm Chris Steyn.
Thank you, Chris.